This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at chrisducker.com/Rainmaker.
This is Youpreneur FM, the official podcast of the Youpreneur Mastermind Community. A place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
What is up, my fellow Youpreneurs, and welcome to episode number 148 of Youpreneur FM. Getting close to that 1.5 century. I'm excited. I don't know about you. Today, we are talking about copy. We're talking about copywriting, sales copy, how we can become more of a wordsmith when it comes to our online marketing via our landing pages, our newsletters, our emails, and that sort of type of thing. My very good friend, Ray Edwards, the copywriting god, as far as I'm concerned, is on the show to have a bloody good chat about everything copywriting. Before I do that, however, allow me to remind you, as always, that as a podcast listener of Youpreneur FM, you instantly qualify for a $50 discount on annual Youpreneur membership. All you got to do to grab a hold of that offer is pop over to youpreneur.com/podcast. And you'll be able to sign up, grab that discount, and get instant access to all of our proprietary training videos, all of our private forums, and a whole lot more. We even throw in a t-shirt. Yes, apparel. We're talking swag, baby. It's a darn nice one as well. So that's youpreneur.com/podcast for that $50 discount, just in case you figure that becoming a member of a mastermind community will help you catapult your business to the next level here in 2016. Now, part of catapulting your business at any time throughout the course of any year, for that matter, is really knowing how to craft the right words to build up enthusiasm, excitement, to suggest and persuade our customers and prospective customers to take action, to purchase our products, our services, to attend our live events, to hire us as a speaker or a coach. And Ray Edwards has been doing this longer than anybody else I know. He has written copy, sales copy, that has literally made millions and millions of dollars for his clients online around the world, and he's been doing it, like I said, longer than anybody I know. So when I sat down, I said, you know what? I really need to cover this in depth. I haven't done it before in, 147 episodes. It was about time to really, really go deep diving into this particular topic. And Ray was the only person that I could think of that could truly do exactly that. He takes us through an entire system to writing better sales copy, step by step by step. Now, you often hear me say on this show, in my intros, grab a notepad, you're going to need it. This is one where you really are going to need to take some serious notes, because Ray drops so many value bombs on this show, there's going to be nothing left of your eardrums, I guarantee you. So here's myself and Ray talking all about how we can write better sales copy. So Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris. It is my pleasure to be here.
Well, it's going to be my pleasure and our pleasure as youpreneurs coming together here to discuss something that you know more about than pretty much everybody else I know, and that's copywriting, or writing copy that sells and persuades and gets people excited about what you are all about. So I'm pumped to have you here.
Well, I'm pumped to talk about copywriting, and it's funny because I'm a geek about copywriting, and for the first thing I usually have to do is explain to people, no, I cannot help you protect your intellectual property. That's not what this is about. Right. That's a different word. This is about writing ads that persuade people. And just to tell you how much of a geek I was, though, when I was growing up, my grandmother used to get these newspapers. And they were the most interesting newspapers I'd ever read. They had great stories in them about UFOs and about Sasquatch and all kinds of weird things. And it was the National Enquirer and the Weekly World News.
Okay.
These are the quote newspapers that I was talking about. But my favorite part of these newspapers was in the back every month, there would be these articles, these page-long articles that were about the most amazing things. And usually they were about a book that was filled with information about how to get what you want out of life, how to be more successful, how to attract more money to you. One of the ones that fascinated me to no end was how to rub away belly fat with your hand using an ancient Chinese secret.
Yes.
And I had no idea until I was like in my teens that these were not actually articles. They were actually sales copy written by a guy named Eugene Schwartz, one of the greatest copywriters of all time. And he sold books via newspaper ads like this for like 10 times their retail cost. This was before the internet or anything like that. I mean, you had to actually put a check in the mail and send it in, and they would mail you the book, and he would sell you a book that would sell for $5. He'd sell it to you for $50. It was incredible. And so that's how much of a geek I am. That's where it started for me as a child. So yes,
well, that's okay.
It's a dysfunction, but it's worked out well.
I was going to say everybody has to start dysfunctionally in some capacity somewhere. So you found your geek outlet there. I appreciate that. So let's start a little bit then at the beginning of things. So you become a geek of copy. You think it's great. You're obviously learning, I guess, to a certain degree as you read in these magazines and these newspapers over the years. When do you decide, when does Ray decide to say, you know what, this is what I'm going to be known for. This is what I want to focus on, helping other people do better. When did that moment hit you?
Well, that moment hit me pretty early on. But when I figured out I was going to start calling myself a copywriter, that's a little more slippery. That comes in a lot later. But I had a friend when I was 14 years old. Yes, when I was 14, I actually had a friend. It's true.
That's good. Good to know.
And my friend told me about this part-time job he had working at the local radio station in Eastern Kentucky, where I lived at the time. And he said, I go in every Sunday and I play the countdown show and they pay me to do that. And my first question was, what do you mean you play the countdown show? And he said, well, you know, the Casey Kasem Top 40 that comes on a record. Some Upreneur listeners will know what a record was. Some will be scratching their head right about now. It's a black vinyl disc that you put on a thing called a record player we used to have. I think they're making a comeback, so maybe more people know about them than I'm giving credit for. But Casey Kasem was on a record. He wasn't actually in the studio, so I was disappointed by that. But then I discovered that this guy had like the world's greatest job. He listened to the top 40 hits, and he got paid to do it. So I instantly started going to the radio station, trying to get hired, and they hired me. And I quickly figured out, over my first few years in radio, that the people who drove the nice cars in the parking lot were not the DJs. They were the salespeople.
Right.
So I figured out, okay, if I can learn how to help those people do their job better, maybe I too will drive a nicer car and not get fired so quickly. DJs tended to get fired really quickly. So I started learning how to write copy for our clients at our radio stations to help them sell more of their products or services or cars or beauty salon products or whatever they sold. I wrote for any kind of a business you can imagine, really. And it was not a stretch for me because I came from a family of entrepreneurs. My mom was an entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. My grandparents, my uncles and aunts. And so I understood that what people wanted from their advertising was not to build an image or to, you know, do quote branding. They wanted to make the cash register ring. So that was my focus for a long time. I was in radio for 30 years. I did really well at that. And then along came this thing called the internet. I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I told my friends in the radio business, I said, you know, we have a problem here because soon people are going to have all the music that we give them in their pocket for free with no commercials. And then that's going to be a problem for us. And nobody wanted to listen to me. So I just took my marketing and promotional skills and moved them over to the internet and discovered that people would actually pay me for them there, which that was a new concept. And I had the good fortune of writing for a few really well-known people, and they started recommending me to their friends, and I kind of got the reputation of being the go-to guy to help do online promotions. And so that's how I ended up working and writing for people like Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, who are the Chicken Soup for the Soul guys, and for folks like Tony Robbins and Jeff Walker and a long list of people that you've never heard of also, but who were really successful entrepreneurs. And I just love bringing together people who have a great product or service with the people who need that great product or service, and then communicating that message so that the two can connect and they can benefit one another.
I love it. Okay. And I love the way things like that happen. And It's great. And now you've got this amazing personal brand where you blog, you podcast. Do you do a lot of speaking?
I do. I do quite a bit. I don't do as much as I used to.
Now, is that out of, I'm always curious when somebody says that. I used to do X, but I don't do much of it nowadays. Is that a self-inflicted decision? Or, I mean, like why not do more speaking? Maybe you don't like it. I don't know.
No, I love it. I love speaking. And what I did was I really burned myself out. I was speaking every weekend for about a year.
And holy moly. Okay.
Everywhere. And I just felt like I was living in airplanes and Sheratons. And I just really got kind of burned on the whole thing. And so I took some time off from doing that. And I've slowly started adding it back in. And I just say slowly because I think I have to be careful because I love doing it so much that I'm my first inclination is to say, speak? Yes. Where? When? I'm there.
Yeah.
Let me in.
No, I said going into, I said, because obviously I did a lot of speaking in 2014 to promote the book and everything. And I said at the end of 2014, you know what? An invite started coming through for 2015. And I said, I'm not going to do so much speaking in 2015. I'm really not. I'm just going to take it easy. But by the time the year, I mean, the year's obviously now basically finished. And I think I've ended up doing like 16 or 17 speaking gigs this year. So it can creep back up. But what happens is I book a trip. And obviously, as you well know, I'm over here in the Philippines. So I book a trip to the US to speak at, say, one or maybe two events within a couple of weeks or something. And then another one comes in. And then another one comes in. Well, I'm there. I might as well do it.
Yes,
you know, a flight from you know, LA to Vegas is nothing. A flight from the Philippines to Vegas is a whole different ballgame, you know. So they do. They creep up on you. They creep up
but
on
I,
you.
But I love speaking. And I don't know if this is true for you, but I feel most alive when I'm speaking to a live audience. I mean, I have a lot of listeners to my podcast. I mean, relatively compared to the rooms that I speak to. Like I'll be speaking at Social Media Marketing World. There'll be a lot of people there, but there's more people that listen to my podcast than will be at that convention. But when you're with people, there's something about the energy in the room and the interplay with the audience. I mean, I just have so much fun doing it. So I love it.
Oh, me too. Me too. So let's talk about now. Obviously, you're on Youpreneur FM. We're all about building a business out of our brands, as you know.
I like that.
So well, there you go. So, and you are a Youpreneur member as well. We should state that very firmly here. So, what have you done, say, in the last 12 to 18 months that has really helped to grow your own brand and your business?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that because what happened was I brought my son into the business full time. And up until then, I had been, I feel like I'm at confession now. I'd been doing like everything in the business myself. And I had actually read your book and I thought it was a good idea. I read the book and I thought that's all good stuff for somebody else. And it wasn't working out so well for me. Remember that part where I said I got burned out? And my son, who had been working for the city of Fresno, California, he'd been working in the mayor's office there with the city planning and different functions like that. He came back to work with me in the business and he said, Dad, I want to look at strategy because I'm a strategic thinker. And he started asking questions like, why are you doing all these different things? And where do you want the business to go? Where do you want it to be 5 years from now? You know, all the stuff that I do with other people, which I apparently was not able to do with myself. So the best thing, the thing that I've done the most, that has grown the business the most and really advanced us has been bringing him on board and letting him be the director of strategic development for our company and listening to him when he said things that were hard for me to hear, like, Dad, you're too scattered. You need to be more focused and you need to let me handle all these other things. You need to focus on the things that only you can do. And we've actually dialed in on that, brought more help on board. Many of the things that you teach in Virtual Freedom and in Youpreneur. And I'm kind of late to the schoolroom, but I'm getting good grades now.
Well, that's okay. Cause you've caught up.
I'm right? Remedial, you've
done your homework. Done your homework. Yeah, that's good. Well, I mean, I always ask these questions because, you know, what works for some person might not work for somebody else and vice versa, obviously. And, you know, for me, the one thing the one thing I've struggled with, and I'm a sales and marketing guy, I have been my entire life, but here's the thing. Writing sales copy is different to selling face-to-face or over the telephone. Yeah. It's very different.
Yes.
Crafting those kind of words. So this is why when I was getting you on the show, I was like, man, I'm going to give him a bloody good grilling because not only do I need it, I know some of my listeners, if not all of my listeners, probably need a little bit of a crash course on this as well. So let's kind of break this down here as we fly into our second half of the call. How do we write with more influence in our words, with more persuasion in our words? How can we do that?
Well, I love the way that you asked that question because it is about writing for influence. And if you write for influence first, it's much easier to write to sell later. And it's the difference between strategy and tactics. And those words get used interchangeably a lot, but they're two very different things. The strategic approach is your overall approach or methodology to doing business. And the tactical element is the actual minute detailed tasks that you use to support the strategic approach. So people do things that are tactical and they call it strategy and it's totally off base. So writing for strategic influence is in the best way I can sum it up is this way, Chris, and you do this beautifully. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it's where you think of everything you write as a communication and an opportunity to influence the thinking of the people to whom you're writing. And you have certain previously determined ideas, beliefs, mindsets, acceptable modes of behavior that you want your readers to adopt and agree with you on. You want them to buy into your agenda. And so you systematically, intentionally distribute those strategic ideas into your writing over time, into your blog posts, into your podcasts. And it's nothing nefarious. You're very above board about what you're doing, but the people who like the message that you're writing and communicating will be attracted to it and they listen to it more and they process it more and they buy into it more. And so you've influenced them before you have even ever met them or asked them to buy anything. So by the time it comes to the point where you're going to ask them to buy, or you're going to say, I have a product to offer. I have a program called Youpreneur. You should become part of our mastermind community. By the time you get ready to say that, they've already bought into you because you've strategically influenced them. So now selling to them becomes so much easier.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Completely. I mean, it also goes back, and I talked about this not so long ago on one of my solo sessions here on the show where I was going through my pre-launch strategy for the Youpreneur membership. And I talked about how I'd already written the content for my landing page. The copy was done and finished. But what I started to do, and you'll love this, I know, I started to go on Periscope. And I was literally dropping entire headlines on a live audience.
Yes.
From the copy.
Yes.
And I was almost validating them live to see whether or not I'd get a lot of hearts or a lot of comments and getting feedback and all that sort of stuff. And there were several stuff. I can tell you something right now. There were several pieces of that copy that got removed because it fell on deaf ears when I was doing those things. There were several things that were obviously changed, and we did. We got on two or three times in the course of about a week just before we launched to sort of test out certain things. And obviously, unbeknownst to the audience, that's exactly what's going on. I call it incredibly smart marketing. Some people might call it very sneaky, but it worked.
I call it very strong kung fu.
Yes, that's what your kung fu is strong. All right, I love it. Oh my gosh. Okay, so all right. So let's say you know we've started to build up our influence through our copywriting. We have listened to our audience and we know what their pain points are and how we can help them. We've created some kind of a solution. It might be a book. It might be a course of some kind. Maybe it's a live event, whatever it is. How do we then go from influence into strategically, I guess, using every bit of persuasion that we can now to sell this stuff?
Okay, so I'm gonna try to condense like several days worth of copywriting training.
I was gonna say like 15 years of experience.
So
right,
the super important thing you have to do first is think about the difference between external pressure and internal pressure. So external pressure when you're selling is the customer buys because of the pressure that you put on them for your reasons, and
sure.
that feels bad. We all know when that's happening to us and we don't like it. And internal pressure is that feeling where you buy because you feel like I have to have this and they're not putting any pressure on me, but I have to have this. And you know that feeling as well. And it feels good. Although sometimes you think, how am I going to explain this to my wife? But I have to have this.
Right. Yes.
So yeah. Our challenge as copywriters is to understand our customers well enough so that we can tap into and communicate directly to their internal desires. And that's what you were doing when you were testing out those headlines on Periscope, which I think is beautiful. That's exactly the kind of thing that we need to do more of. And I usually tell people that people ask, well, how do I know what the language is that my customer uses? And I say, well, it's a very sophisticated technique. You talk to them. It's crazy. It's high tech, but I think it's going to work out. I think people are going to be using it a lot.
Yeah, it's tried and true. Yes. Yeah.
So on an external level, it's the difference between persuasion and manipulation, if you ever wondered about that. External, on the external level, persuasion is when you are selling to a customer for their reasons, and manipulation is when you are selling to the customer for your reasons.
Right, right.
And then on the internal level, I feel, as a customer, I feel manipulated when I make decisions that I regret later, and I feel persuaded when I make decisions that I celebrate later. So nice. What this comes down to is understanding where your customer is in terms of awareness of the problem that they have that you're solving and their need for a solution. And that's where, if you think about it like this, if you knock on somebody's door and they open the door and they're in the middle of dinner and you say, hi, would you like to look at this new vacuum cleaner I have for sale? What's going to happen?
Well, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get turned away.
They're going to slam the door in your face.
I know, because I try to do that as a teenager, that exact thing.
I did too. It was solar panels in my case, but same basic experience. Well, that's because the level of buyer awareness was very low. I have an acronym for this. I call it the open awareness scale. So O stands for oblivious. These are the hardest people to sell to. They don't have any idea that they have a problem. They don't have any idea that you have a solution, and they don't care. Mm. You are just an annoying pest.
Right.
The P in the open scale is the pondering stage. This is where they maybe have thought about, like they've looked around their house and said, you know, my carpets are kind of dirty. I should probably do something about that. It's sort of embarrassing. And so they haven't thought about buying a vacuum cleaner or a carpet cleaner or anything like that, but they've at least looked and noticed their carpets are kind of scrungy.
Sure.
The E level is the engaged level. This is where, like, it's a guy. He's a single guy. He's got a date coming over for dinner, and he realizes, man, my carpets look really bad. I should do something about this. This is going to make me look bad. I'm not going to do well on this date if she sees how dirty my carpets are. And that's the person who's maybe going to go out and look at, you know, renting a steam cleaner, or they're going to think about buying it. They're engaged in a process.
Sure.
But the N level is that's the person who's in need. These are the people who are the easiest to sell. This is like if you have a hamburger stand and there are hungry people walking by, you don't have to sell anything. You are not an annoying pest. You are a welcome guest. They look and say, oh, the hamburger guy, I'm starving. Let me load me up. I'll have all the hamburgers you got.
Right.
You want to sell to people who are in need. They know they're in need. They know that there's a solution. They know that you have it. And what they really want to know is, can I afford it? How much is it? How quickly can I get it? And so my first task for most people is to ask, figure out how you can sell to those people, because those people require the least amount of, quote, selling. You can just share that you have a solution because you already know their problem. You already know they have a need for it. They're the easiest to sell. It's like selling aspirin to people who have a headache is the tried and true analogy, and it works. So now, am I headed in the right direction here?
Oh, you are. Loving it. I'm soaking this all up myself. I love it.
Okay. So I have a framework that I've developed that is easy to write an outline for any sales message, even if you're writing a blog post. Maybe you're not writing a message to sell a product, although this is what I usually use this for, but it can also be used to write a blog post or to construct a podcast outline. The point is you're trying to either persuade people to do something or empower them to believe that they can do something. And that really covers almost every communication you'll ever make. So only if you ever want to do either of those two things could you use this framework. So here's how it goes.
I'm loving this. Go on, keep going. Is it weird that, I mean, it's not weird. And for you guys listening in, you know I get excited about this stuff. I love this. Well, okay, keep going.
I love that you love it. And I think there's nothing more fun for an entrepreneur than to know we've created something of value that helps people and to see them buy it and get excited about it. And they feel like they got the better end of the bargain. That's how I know.
So true.
That's how I know when things are really working well, because both sides feel like they got the best end of the deal. That's the only way that's acceptable for me to do business. So as you're constructing your sales message, think of the word pastor, P-A-S-T-O-R. And I'm not suggesting that you become a preacher. That's not what I mean. The ancient meaning of that word was it referred to a shepherd. And what does the shepherd do? The shepherd takes care of the flock, cares for the flock, feeds them, protects them from predators. We know the story, the good shepherd laid down his life for the sheep. That's the kind of attitude that I suggest you take for your customers. You are protecting them. You are shepherding them. You're leading them to a decision. And whether the decision is to buy from you or not buy from you, it doesn't matter to you because you just want them to make the decision that's right for them. And if you take that attitude, if you took nothing else away from what I'm sharing with you except that, it would totally revolutionize the way you sell. You would never feel again like you were selling at high pressure, and nobody would feel pressured to buy you because they can feel that care coming through everything that you say. They feel that enthusiasm coming through, and they know that you just want what's best for them. So the letters of the word pastor stand for the following things, and this is how you can structure your sales message, and I can give this to you in about 5 to 7 minutes, and if you take this, you can write better sales messages instantly. And here's how it goes. The P stands for person, problem, and pain. You think of the person that you're writing to. What is their life like? Put yourself in their life. What's their reality like? What is the problem that they're dealing with? That's what you're proposing to solve with your problem, with your product or your service. And what is the pain they're experiencing? And you need to be able to describe that pain in excruciating detail to let them know that you understand the pain. And I think it was Jay Abraham who said, if you can adequately describe in enough detail the pain that the person is experiencing, they will automatically believe that you must have the solution because you understand the problem so well. So my only addition to that statement would be, make sure you do have the solution.
I think a lot of people, they start working on ideas because they think that their audience, their community wants something, but you need to know, and you need to, like you say, amplify the hell out of it.
Yes. And amplify is the next letter in the acronym. It's the A, and it stands for amplify the cost of not solving the problem. You can't just leave it alone because we're great creatures of denial. We love to live and travel down that river of denial. And it is, you know, I don't want to face the consequences of the fact that I eat too much and I don't exercise enough, or I don't want to face the consequences of the fact that I shouldn't be smoking cigarettes. And some people say, well, if you're amplifying the consequences, aren't you using fear to market? And my answer is no, I'm using concern. I'm using, actually, if I can use the word love, because I would not let somebody I love engage in a harmful behavior that was going to be disastrous for them. If I knew it in advance, I would be sharing with them, you know, carefully, tactfully, and in the most loving tones possible. I'd be saying, look, you need to do something about this because I'm concerned about where you're headed and what's going to happen to you if you don't take care of this later on in your life. You could become diabetic. You could have lung cancer. You could have whatever the consequences. If you keep treating your spouse this way, you could have problems in your marriage. And so you apply it to whatever your product or service is. You know already what the cost of not solving the problem is. You've got to make it real for the people you're selling to. You amplify the consequences. And this can be as simple as saying, you already know how bad it is. You have this problem, but it gets worse if you don't take care of it. And here's the ways in which it gets worse. And you describe them. And then you move to the S in the word pastor. And the S stands for the story, the solution, or system. So the story, we use the classic storytelling framework. I know you're a Star Wars fan, so you'll love this. It's the hero's journey. Yes. You describe this archetypical story. It's easy for me to say, but there are several different story forms that work, but the hero's journey is the one that is most universally acceptable. And it's there in Star Wars. It's there in The Hobbit. And you've probably heard this 100 times, so I don't have to tell you the whole thing, but it usually involves an unsuspecting normal person living a normal life. They get thrown into extraordinarily bad circumstances against their will. A guide appears to help them get through this problem, teaches them the solution to the problem that leads them through a couple of attempts where they fail, and then ultimately to success through triumphing over the different problems that they face. And that's the most terrible representation of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey that anybody has ever rendered. But I'm his worst student ever, but it served me well, at least at that level. So you walk them through this story. Maybe it's your story. Like in your case, Chris, you have the story of, you know, back in 2009, you're working 14-hour days and you came to a physical crossroads where you collapsed and you had to go to the hospital and you were physically exhausted and you had all these different problems and you had to make a decision. I mean, that was, your world was thrown into chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And you were forced, you were at a crossroads. I have to decide which way am I going to go? What journey am I going to go on? And you went on a quest on how to remove yourself from your business and become a virtual CEO. And that's what you did.
Yep.
That's your hero's journey story right there.
I love it. And I tell it, you know, I tell it over and over and over again because I know that people can identify with it.
And you tell it well. And that's one of the things, I'm glad you said that, because sometimes people say to me, well, Ray, but I don't want to spend all that time talking about myself. I've been told, don't make it about me, make it about them. This is what you have to understand. It is about them if you tell the story in a relatable way. Sure. If you tell the story and you make yourself the hero, like I'm this awesome person and I'm so incredible that I'm like James Bond. My suit never gets ruffled. I always get the girl and I always win at Baccarat. I don't even know what Baccarat is. I just know James Bond plays it and he always wins. But that's not what people want to hear from you. They're only interested in seeing that when it's Daniel Craig. But for when you and I are telling our sales story, they want to hear that we struggled because they can connect with that. They want to hear the emotion. They want to hear that, you know, I was at the point of despair where I thought, if I don't do something about this, I'm going to die, or my business is going to fall apart, or my marriage is going to fall apart, or whatever the consequences were going to be. And that's how I came to the turning point and I realized I had to do something about it. And here's what I did. And then people are hanging on the edge of their seat. And then you just describe to them what your solution is. How do I solve this problem? Well, in your case, for instance, you have this little exercise you walk people through called the three lists to freedom. And we don't have time to go into all this, but one of the beautiful things about that is it's giving people the result they want in advance when they make those three lists. They can already see, they can do that simple exercise and they already have proven to themselves, aha, I get it. I understand how this works. This will work for me. And now I have to have the book. I have to come to the one day. I have to be part of Youpreneur. The whole thing, just because of that one self-referential piece of proof. And then there's testimony. There's a three-level proof that you have to give people. Has this person done what they're talking about? Has this person been able to teach other people to do what they're talking about? And finally, can they teach me how to do it? And you do this through third-party testimony and through self-referential proof, like we just talked about. And it's like in a court case, it's testimony. And Dan Kennedy is famous for saying, you don't bring a little bit of testimony, you bring a preponderance of proof. So it's incontrovertible. And then finally, there's the offer. That's the O of pastor. This is just what you're offering. This is what I have for sale. This is what I have available to you. You can become part of Youpreneur, and it's a community and it's a mastermind, and you're no longer alone. We're solving the biggest problem you have, which is you think you're a lone wolf, but you're not a lone wolf. You're no longer going to be in the cold, scrounging for food, starving to death alone anymore. You're with your pack. And then the R is for response. You just request a response. You say, click the button below, become a member of the community, get the t-shirt, whatever the response is you're looking for. But that's P-A-S-T-O-R, person, problem, amplify, story, solution, testimony, offer, and response. And that's the formula for constructing a very powerful, persuasive sales message.
Man, I love it. Oh my God. I feel like, you know, like every now and then when you have one of those conversations and you say, and I'm very blessed to have this kind of conversation quite regularly with my guests for this show. And I know that my audience appreciates it, but there's not that many podcasters that I know that genuinely go back and listen to their own interviews that they do with their guests. I don't know whether you do it regularly. I do. I mean, I do it probably more than anybody else that I know. And I know that I'm going to have to go back and resit this little bit of homework, because there's so much gold in here. And I think you've got to, when you have a conversation like that, particularly when you've got like a framework, a system per se, that you can follow and you create that blueprint for yourself, like why wouldn't you go back and just consume that over and over again? I don't know.
Well,
maybe, I don't know. Maybe people don't like to sell.
I'm so honored by that. Thank you so much. I think selling is one of the most honorable and important professions in the world, because what we're doing, Zig Ziglar said, selling is nothing more than the transference of enthusiasm from one person to another.
And yeah, I love
what it is. I mean, if you're enthusiastic, it's because you're helping people. And I want to help people. I want people to be better off. I want to leave them better off than how I found them. That's really what I'm all about.
You know, I have a funny story here, and I think I've told it once before on the show, but it was a while back. But you mentioned the very late, great Zig Ziglar there. I was probably, 11 or 12 years old. And I came across a audio tape of one of Zig's, you know, speeches or whatever. And it was at one of my friend's house. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, this guy is, and it was his father's, it wasn't his. And it just happened to be on the background or whatever. And I remember listening to it thinking, this guy's like legitimate. Like, I love the way he's got that cool accent and he's like talking about helping people and, like you say, passion and enthusiasm, and this guy's great. Now, I forgot all about him for a while, but then 6-8 months after that or so, I was in the local library. And for those of you who are too young enough to know what a library is, it's this great place where they have shelves with these things called books on them.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience. You can borrow them and bring them back like a week later. And if you don't, there's late fines and everything. No, but I had this experience of going in and seeing in the audiobook section of the we're talking cassette tapes here, so long ago, a Zig Ziglar tape. And I can't remember what it was called, but I did something that I've never forgotten. And I learned an incredible lesson from it. I took that tape out and I never brought it back. I was a naughty boy. Fundamentally stole it from the library because I liked it so much. And my mother found out that I hadn't returned it because, you know, back in the day, you would get these postcards through the door.
Oh, yeah.
Saying you haven't returned this book. You know, you've got to return it, otherwise you'll have to pay, sort of thing. And she found out that I kept it, and she made me take it back to the library with her in tow and give it back and apologize. And I quote, "You will say, I am sorry for stealing this from the library.
Oh.
It will never happen again." And it was horrible. And then we went directly from there to church and she made me sit confession. And it was one of the most brutal. My mother was probably one of the most Catholic Irish women you'd ever meet in your life. I mean, I have an Aunt Mary, so you can imagine how Catholic the family traditions were back in the day, right? But I mean, I learned a lot from that. Like, I learned, number one, very early that you shouldn't steal things, obviously. But number two was, like, very early on in my life, I was already being attracted to that sales mentality.
Yes.
Of doing it right for the right reasons, not just trying to make some commission or make a buck. You know, a lot of people know the story that I quit, you know, I quit college a year in to become a full-time sales guy with a publishing company in London. I was with that company for a long time into in my mid to late 20s. So, I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, these influences that we've had for decades and decades are fundamentally all the same. Do it right, do it for the right reasons, for the right people. And selling is not a bad thing. It's not a snake oil type scenario anymore. I think every small business owner could become better at what they do from a sales perspective. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely do. And I got to tell you, this is kind of spooky, but I have to share this. You're going to get what I mean in just a second. When I was about 11 or 12 years old, my mother was in the real estate business and she took me to a seminar where there was this guy speaking named Zig Ziglar.
Oh, stop it. This is spooky. And wow.
I bought the first ever, well, mom bought it for me, my first ever self-help book. And it was called See You at the Top.
Oh,
and I read that book probably half a dozen times. I was mesmerized by it. And I quit college a year in to be in my own business. As a sales
what?
Person. Yes.
Okay, this is beyond Woo! Spooky. This is scary now. It's scary
it's
stuff.
Eerie right now. We've crossed over the Twilight Zone.
Well, listen, right, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, man. I mean, let me ask you this to wrap up. If you had one tip when it comes to creating copy that sells and persuades in the right manner, if you had one tip that nobody listening in here should gloss over, what would it be?
Go spend time with the people who are your customers and record, either with an audio recorder, preferably, or just listen very carefully. Let them talk. And if you'll just record and talk to them for an hour or 2 hours about their problems, about the things that bug them, about the things that keep them up at night, their fears, their frustrations, their anxieties, the fears about the future, how they think about their kids, and just listen and capture all that language. If you will take that, if you record it on like on your iPhone or something and you have it transcribed, you can take their words and form that into sales copy and you will beat any of the great sales copywriters, myself included, who haven't done that exercise, because that's the thing that everybody misses. It's knowing your customer so well that when you speak, you're using their language and they automatically think, you get me, you are me. You understand me, and therefore I know you, I like you, I trust you. Whatever you say, I'm going to do. That's the biggest secret that people hear it, but nobody really receives it. Very few people do. But if you'll do that, you'll be a top-notch copywriter without any training at all.
I love it. That's a great message to end on. Now, you have a book coming out as well. The title is Write Copy That Sells.
How to Write Copy That Sells, yes.
Okay, and I am going to tell each and every single one of you tuning in right now, you've got to pick up a copy of this book. Even better, Ray's giving it away for free. All you got to do is cover shipping to wherever you want the book shipped to. So to grab your own copy, I want you to head over to chrisducker.com/copywritingbook, and you'll be forwarded directly to Ray's site. He's still in the process of building out, hence the pretty link right now as we record. But it'll be live by the time this goes live. And I want you to genuinely pick up a copy of this book. I think, honestly, when I say that I think every small business owner, and particularly people doing and growing businesses online, because it's all very visual, very word-driven, very video-driven, et cetera, copywriting goes beyond writing sales pages and blog posts. This is copywriting for scripts, for sales videos, and all the rest of it. We need to get better at this. How to write copy to sales, chrisducker.com/copywritingbook. Free of charge, just cover shipping. Ray will hook you up. Am I right, sir?
You're absolutely right, and you will love it. I promise you, I've poured my guts into this book to put everything I can to possibly help you sell more of your products, your services, your podcasts, your blog posts, to get people to click on your social media links. These are the tools that will help you do all those things.
I love it. Well, I mean, if this conversation is anything to go by, I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of it myself. But for you guys, show notes, links to that, and everything else we talked about inside today's call, chrisducker.com/episode148. Ray, you're a genuine rock star. Thank you very much for being here, bud.
Thank you. And as Zig would say, I'll see you at the top.
At the top, baby. There we go. All right, for you guys, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, here at Youpreneur FM, I often say that there are many business podcasts that you can tune into, but right here, right now, you are tuning into mine, and I thank you for that. It's highly appreciated. Until next week, take good care, be kind to each other, do something amazing, and I'll see you soon. Bye for now.
If the idea of an entrepreneurial community where you get to learn from the best in the business, as well as rub shoulders, gain support, have access to immediate feedback, as well as nonstop accountability from your peers, is something that excites you, then visit youpreneur.com for more information and to get started on building a business you can truly be proud of today. That's youpreneur.com. We'll see you on the inside.